You've heard about VIP membership, you've thought about VIP membership, and now we're going to entice you to activate your VIP membership. Today, you can take $8 off a VIP membership. That brings our $9.99 monthly rate down to $1.99 for your first month, or apply it to our cheaper rates when you commit to 3 months or 1 year. That's $8 off with coupon code LIVECAST18. That's LIVECAST18, all one word, no space, LIVECAST18 in the coupon code box when you check out pwtorch.com/goVIP. What comes with the VIP membership? Well, first of all the PW Torch livecasts on one RSS feed that you can subscribe to. But as a VIP member, these plugs and similar plugs, along with the advertising and commercials, edited out of the show. So a streamlined experience. Plus, VIP after shows, exclusive post-show content just for VIP members. Also, VIP exclusive content that nobody else hears. The Wade Keller Hotline every single day that I put out, and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin that I host, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables, including the Royal Rumble post-pay-per-view show recorded right after the Rumble that I host. Also, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop site, pwtorch.com, becomes pwtorchvip.com for VIP members, ad-free access to everything on the site, and so much more. Did I mention 30-plus years of archives? Retro radio shows going back to the early 1990s, thousands upon thousands of hours of podcasts on any topic you can imagine in professional wrestling from a top trusted team. Go check out our benefits, over 70 exclusive podcasts, over 25 live casts with plugs and ads removed, an RSS feed that lets you sign up for shows by theme, by title, or all at once, whatever is convenient for you. And yes, it's compatible with popular podcast apps on Apple and Android. So go check out details. That's pwtorch.com/goVIP. Choose your subscription option, 1 month, 3 month, or 1 year, and then enter coupon code LIVECAST18 to take $8 off the price of your subscription. We are journalists. We are independent analysts. We are forever students of the game, working passionately to help you understand pro wrestling better and enjoy it on a different level than most fans, by never stopping our own journey to learn and inquire and decipher everything going on in this fascinating genre. We are independent. We are unattached to and uncompromised by any affiliation with a pro wrestling company or dependence on cooperation with the companies we cover. So you can trust that what we're saying isn't hindered by conflicts of interest or fear of losing a current or future job in the industry. There's less hedging than you'll find elsewhere. You might have noticed that. No fanboy blind loyalty and no holding back. But we're also committed to fairness and exploring all sides of decisions that are made by promoters and wrestlers. So check out our complete coverage in print, text, and audio. pwtorch.com/goVIP. $8 off. A coupon awaits you. Act now before this offer expires. It's for a very limited time. The coupon code is LIVECAST18.
Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Sunday, February 4th, 2018, and I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here with you hosting Wrestling Night in America on pwtorchlivecast.com. Welcome to a special early edition of the show, as it is Super Bowl Sunday here in America, and rather than have us interfere with the real America's pastime, sorry, baseball, we thought we'd get an early start on it here on a Sunday afternoon. So if you're joining us live, we appreciate you joining us, and if you want to call in, the number to call is 515-605-9345. Now, I do have someone on the line, co-host for the early part of the show today, a longtime close personal friend of mine. His name is Kurt Hoffman, former Gonzo and the Greg producer. Kurt, are you there?
Yes, I am, Greg. Long time no speak, buddy, and today is the day, and you know what? Because of that, I got one question for you, Greg. One question. Where's my football?
And of course, perfect timing for that with the XFL Season 2 announcement. Let me hear it, Kurt. I got to hear that from you.
I was going to make that my closer, but you're so greedy, I'll give it to you.
No way, baby. No way. I'm getting that out in the open early.
And then here it is. Ladies and gentlemen, XFL Season 2!
Any longtime Gonzo and the Greg listeners would know that Kurt would always tease me with that Vince McMahon impression of a second season of the XFL for the long-suffering XFL fan that I am. So once it was announced that Season 2 would actually happen, that was the first thing that crossed my mind, was getting Kurt to do that impression for me. So I could die a happy man now, I guess. We've got that.
It took several years, Greg, but destiny has finally revealed itself.
It's true. It's true. For those of you who are not aware, Gonzo and the Greg was a PW Torch VIP audio show that I hosted for about 2 years in 2010 to about 2012, along with my friend Gonzo, as well as our producer, Kurt Hoffman. The three of us talked wrestling. And if you're interested in checking out one of my early audio shows, they are available in the archives of PWTorch.com for VIP members. So take a listen if you enjoy our takes here this afternoon on Wrestling Night in America. So, Kurt, you were also a guest a couple times on Moonlighting with Greg Parks, another one of my audio shows. So good to have you along here for Wrestling Night in America. I want to hit on a couple big topics with you, Kurt. Last week, we spent 95% of Wrestling Night in America, obviously, with it being the Royal Rumble post-show. A lot of callers wanted to talk about the Royal Rumble. So we didn't get around to talking about the other really major show of the weekend, which was NXT TakeOver Philadelphia on Saturday night. And it was, in my mind, another very solid TakeOver show with a terrific main event. You had a good hardcore match with Aleister Black versus Adam Cole. You had a really solid tag team opener, including the Authors of Pain, who continued to improve. Kurt, if you were able to see TakeOver, where did this TakeOver rank to you in the, I guess, in the TakeOver pantheon of events?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. Because now I'm trying to think in my head, has there ever been really a bad TakeOver? I would just put this in, like, the average of good TakeOvers. Yeah, there's been better TakeOvers, but this is still a very nice, solid TakeOver. If anything, I guess I just wish it had more crazier entrances like back then with Bobby Roode and whatnot. But hey, you know, who am I to complain? It was still very great, very great pay-per-view. And as Steve Austin said in his podcast, they worked their asses off, and it was just a great show.
One of the things that I thought coming out of this show, and I think I've been in the minority on this, is I felt that Johnny Gargano should have gone over in the main event. I thought that his trajectory at this point as a top babyface is too close to Roderick Strong, who came up just short in a number of his attempts to win the NXT title. And now he's sort of been put down the card a little, although he will be appearing on 205 Live this week to face Hideo Itami in the Cruiserweight title tournament. But Gargano, I thought this was the opportunity to really cash in. They had everything going for him. His wife was at ringside. I loved Andrade Almas's title reign to this point. And I'm not someone who usually is a proponent of short title reigns, but I think when you've got someone like Gargano there, you've got to take advantage and strike while the iron is hot, especially the top babyface. And top baby faces are something that's in short supply in the WWE system. So, you know, I know that they've taped some post takeover shows that kind of send things in a different direction. So maybe that's why they didn't put the title on Gargano. But that was my initial reaction coming out of that match. Did you feel that it was the right move to keep the title on Almas?
I felt like that he was going to keep that title. I do kind of agree with you, though. Gargano is probably one of the best faces that NXT has had in quite a while. Like, he has superpower. I was hoping, though, if he was going to lose in that match, I was hoping that Tommaso Ciampa would have actually interrupted the match itself, or you know, maybe Gargano would hit the ropes and they would take that crush to the back, because, you know, Tommaso was always that, like, that thing that was haunting him so much after he'd made the heel turn that he started losing match after match. And then I would think the story would be he's finally getting that momentum. He's almost got the title. And then once again, that freaking demon on his shoulder finally drags him back down. And you know, maybe the next event, he would then have to confront that demon to get it off of him. And then he can get that title. That's what I was hoping for. But you know, it was still pretty nice.
One of the undercard matches pitted Velveteen Dream against Cactus Ohno, and I'm interested to get your take on Velveteen Dream, because here's a guy who embodies a gimmick that we see so rarely in WWE and NXT anymore, at a time where there's a lot of emphasis on being the real you, the Johnny Garganos, the Roderick Strongs, TM61, we're seeing the video packages on them on NXT television, and it's about kind of exploiting their own personal story and being as real as possible to the person that you are with your character. And here's Velveteen Dream, who is just off the charts as a character that you would have seen almost in a different generation from WWE. What's your take on Patrick Clark, how he's done in this gimmick and you know, what the ceiling might be for a gimmick like this in NXT or even on the main roster?
Yeah, no, Greg, I'm glad you asked me that question, because I remember this guy before he began developing Velveteen Dream, but he was wearing like Star Spangled tights. And I hated it. I hated it. I was looking at this guy, I'm like, this is totally not you. The way his composure is in the ring, there's nothing about it that screams, you know, Patriot version 2. I love the turnaround he did. I've never had a wrestler win me over as fast as Velveteen Dream did. Because, you know, the moment he changed the gimmick, I was skeptical at first. But man, I just saw him own that gimmick, and it just kept getting better and better with me. And yeah, he totally won me over with it. I mean, this is a guy. I mean, I know the mentality of WWE nowadays is, you know, just be yourself, but turn it up to 11. I don't know if this is what the guy really is in real life, but he, no matter what though, he is owning this gimmick. He is really, like, I believe this guy is the Velveteen Dream inside and outside the arena. And you know, kudos to him for finding his way. And I think this gimmick will translate so well on the main roster.
I look at Velveteen Dream sort of like Goldust, where if you're not committed 100% to that gimmick, it's going to be DOA. And I don't mean the biker gang that was in WWE in the late 90s. I mean, it would be dead on arrival as a gimmick. Like, no one would buy it, and there'd be nowhere to take it. But much like Dustin Rhodes did with Goldust, I think Patrick Clark is doing with Velveteen Dream.
Yeah, he's taking this gimmick to the end zone. And, you know, it's got like, it almost seems like it's like a part Goldust, part Ravishing Rick Rude. And this is definitely the gimmick that will not be forgotten. I feel he will be climbing the ranks.
Kurt, with the football metaphor, taking it to the end zone here on Super Bowl Sunday, you know your audience, my friend.
That was an accident, too. Wow, I got very hard with myself.
Well,
that one.
I figured that was not on purpose. It came all too naturally to have been... you know, on purpose, I think. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about TakeOver is Adam Cole had the match with Aleister Black, and the Undisputed Era fought in tag team action in the opener against the Authors of Pain. Here are guys in the Undisputed Era: Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, who came in from Ring of Honor. They came in all at the same time. They were put together in this group, seemed to be in for a big push at the outset. Taking into account what you saw from them at TakeOver, what's your opinion on how well they've meshed in NXT right now? And have they disappointed a little bit since their arrival, or is this about where you had them pegged when they would come in?
Let's see. I myself was a little bit disappointed at the beginning, especially when they started losing very quickly when they first showed up. I think they're getting their momentum back, though. It helps that they have the tag team titles and Adam Cole. I mean, granted, I think he's still on a bit of a losing streak, but at least he was in the Royal Rumble, and he got over huge in that Royal Rumble. So, yeah. I think it started off kind of a flop, but I think they're working it now.
And speaking of the Rumble, I don't want to take too much time on this since we've spent the entirety of the last show on this, but we haven't gotten your thoughts on the Rumble. I thought it was a thumbs-up show carried mostly by the two Rumble matches. What was your take on both the men's and the women's Royal Rumble matches?
I enjoyed both of them for two different reasons. The men's Rumble had a lot of great working in there, a lot of great workers, very good spots. I laughed out loud every time somebody decked Heath Slater on his way to the ring. I love the finish of it. You know, keep it simple, stupid. Shinsuke Nakamura should win it, and he should go face AJ Styles at WrestleMania. And they delivered, and hey, look, it worked great. The women's Rumble, I enjoyed because it was just nostalgia after nostalgia. Greg, I bet you popped hard when Molly Holly hit that ring.
Let me tell you what, Molly was my favorite return entry in that Royal Rumble match. I'll tell you that.
Were you starting a She Still Got It chant in Florida?
Unconfirmed. I can neither confirm nor deny that there was a You Still Got It chant within my apartment here.
Well, yeah, overall, both matches, very, very good, very exciting. Man, such a long freaking pay-per-view. I'll be honest, I didn't catch most of this live. I watched the majority of it the next day. And, I mean, I didn't even watch the Raw main event. I didn't watch the Triple Threat match because I needed to make time to watch the Women's Royal Rumble that day. I did catch the highlight of Brock Lesnar wrecking Braun Strowman with a legit liver shot in the middle of the match.
That was a receipt, I think, from a shot that Braun gave him earlier in the match.
Yeah, that was a receipt you will file in your taxes this year. That was stiff.
The Women's Rumble, my concerns with this in the future are the things that made this Rumble really fun in my mind were things that will be tough to repeat in future years. Having, first of all, just the rarity of it. It was the first one, but also bringing, a dozen women back or up from NXT, can that be sustained on a year to year basis?
I don't know. I think so. I think there's a lot of talent coming and going at a given time. I think this might create a boom to where the capacity of women will actually increase in the rosters. Who knows? I don't know. There's always a thought in the back of my head. 205 Live ain't working out so well. What if we just turn it into an all-women's brand? Would that be that bad?
You're not the only one to opine that, I'll say that.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. But either way, I like the start of it. It's great. I thought the Ronda Rousey stuff at the end kind of increased my fears of what I had in Ronda Rousey becoming a WWE wrestler. I'm like, okay, she's awesome in the UFC. Is she awesome on the mic in the WWE? That's so far, I'm a little afraid.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Did you like how they presented Ronda? She didn't come in and win the match, but she came out after the match. Would you have preferred her to be in the match and win it, or do you think the way they presented her was okay?
I thought on paper it was okay. I mean, she looked, I don't want to say she looked a little lost, but she looked, she came down to the ring not thinking, okay, I'm going to make an impact. I'm going to get that title. I'm going to make a statement saying I'm going to go to WrestleMania. Instead, she came down to the ring like, okay, stop here, mug for camera. Okay, stop here on ring, point at sign. Okay, get in ring now. Okay, pretend she, she's just going through directing cues in her head. You can clearly tell she's doing that. And I hate the overproduction of this damn product, which I'm sure is a statement that's been echoed by millions around the world. But besides that, I'm glad she made the appearance. I thought it would have been cool if she would have been in the match, but Stephanie McMahon would have cost her the Rumble. Maybe, making a match between those two at WrestleMania. But it's still nice what they did, though. I liked it.
Well, we're going to take a break here and come back with more former Gonzo and the great producer Kurt Hoffman. We're going to talk some New Japan coming up right after this break. Stay tuned here on Wrestling Night in America. Let me give you a task. pick out a wine you're going to love, but there's a catch. It has to be one you haven't had before. Where would you start? Introducing Wink, spelled W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, shipped right to your door, and starting at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink, W-I-N-C, wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee? And how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink, W-I-N-C, sends wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections. Each month there are new delicious wines, like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. No membership fees, skip any month, cancel any time. Shipping is covered, and if you don't like a bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/PWTorch for $20 off. trywink.com/PWTorch. And we're back here on Wrestling Night in America with former Gonzo and the Greg producer Kurt Hoffman talking now New Japan wrestling. Kurt, I know this is something that has become in your wheelhouse over the last few years. What led to your discovery and enjoyment of New Japan?
Well, it's been a slow burn. I remember on one of our old episodes of Gonzo and the Greg, I remember, I think we're talking about match of the year, or the, you know, maybe the top five list of matches of 2000 and such and such. And it was, I think it was Tanahashi versus, was it Suzuki? I can't remember what that match was exactly. But I remember we sat and we watched the match and we talked about it. And I'm like, wow, this match. I just got introduced to, like, you know, the way they do things down in Japan, the way they treat matches. And then throughout time, I started paying more attention to it. And then they had the One Wrestle Kingdom with Jim Ross doing commentary. And that's what finally led me to go over and watch the whole event. And I loved that. And then I find out about the New Japan World app. And coincidentally, at the same time, also Chris Jericho coming over with this epic program with Kenny Omega. And then here I am, you know, just steadily watching New Japan, and I'm loving everything they have. I'm not gonna go off and say, like, it's so much better than the WWE. No, I just love it for the reasons that they present. This is the reasons that I like the WWE.
I think they can be complementary products to each other. I don't think it's a black or white, zero sum game here. I think you can enjoy New Japan for how they present wrestling as a more sports like, realistic event, but I think you can also enjoy WWE for the athleticism, the pop and circumstance, and the character focus.
I agree. Yeah, I definitely agree. And the way they've exchanged talent to and from, I've seen the benefits of them in one program, and I've seen the benefits of them in the other, and it's just two entirely different things. And I've, having, for example, Chris Jericho come back into New Japan. He wasn't the list Jericho. He modified himself to match what he wanted for New Japan. And yeah, it's no longer a competition. It's really apples and oranges. And I love it. Love the having variety again.
Talking about Chris Jericho, I mean, what do you see? Is this just, he faces Kenny Omega, he goes and faces Naito in his next match, presumably that's what they're setting up. And then is he done? Does he go back to WWE? How long is this New Japan excursion, do you think, for Jericho?
I could see one match with Naito coming up soon. And then, probably a lot of touring with Fozzy. Then maybe either a rematch against Naito or I'm thinking maybe like another match down the pike, maybe in October, I think it's October, with Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestle Cruise thing he's got going on. So I'm thinking Jericho might have a match there with some type of New Japan talent, either Naito or maybe a rematch against Kenny Omega. I don't see him doing any sustained programs in New Japan. He's just going there for a couple of one-offs, make a big impression, go leave. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we won't see Jericho back in the WWE till maybe, well, I don't know. I guess he could float back and forth. So maybe Jericho could still show up, around SummerSlam and then, maybe stick around for a month and then go off and do his own thing again. It's the thing with Jericho. You just don't know. He's just kind of floating around like the wrestling version of Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, he's in a unique position because he's on good terms with New Japan, obviously. He's on good terms with WWE. He showed up at the Raw 25 celebration. So he's able to kind of negotiate very political waters and really make a name for himself as someone who, we've seen independent guys kind of do their own thing. But leveraging two of the biggest companies in the world, pro wrestling wise, and being able to take part in both of them is really interesting. And it's not something you normally see.
I call it historic. Something like this has never been heard of. And it's going to be talked about for such a long time, too. I mean, maybe this could be so beneficial to both businesses. Maybe he could be some type of a glue that somehow brings them together in such a way. Like maybe with WCW back then with New Japan, where they did some exchanges and whatnot.
Well, they'll have to fight off Impact Wrestling, I think, now that they have Don Callis running things. And, of course, he's a broadcaster for the English version of New Japan World. I would assume that he would like to kind of put together some sort of working relationship with New Japan and Impact. So that's certainly something to watch out for as well. Relating to New Japan, a big New Beginning show in Osaka coming up next Saturday. It's Yoshihashi versus Naito. Will Ospreay against Takahashi, the Junior Heavyweight Championship. Goto versus Evil for the Never Openweight title, and Okada versus Sonata for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. So that is next Saturday, New Beginning in Osaka. We'll talk about the fallout from that right here on Wrestling Night in America the next day. The big news coming back from New Beginnings this past week was Cody Rhodes attacking Kenny Omega, hitting them with Crossroads, and setting up Cody versus Kenny Omega at ROH Supercard of Honor WrestleMania weekend in New Orleans. So that match will take place on WrestleMania weekend via ROH, interestingly enough. This whole Cody-Kenny Omega deal, two alphas sort of fighting for control of the Bullet Club. What's your take on Cody Rhodes and what he's done in Japan so far?
Oh, I love what he's been doing. He is just straight up an awesome heel. His last match at Wrestle Kingdom involving his wife against Ibushi was just tremendous. He's doing such a great job of finding himself amidst the Bullet Club. And I'm thinking when it's all said and done with him and Omega, I'm thinking Omega probably might break off. And maybe him and the Young Bucks will actually just have the Elite as a separate group, I'm guessing, from Bullet Club. And I'm thinking Cody Rhodes should just stay in there as the number one in the Bullet Club.
Are you saying Bullet Club Black and White and Bullet Club Wolfpack?
Bullet Club de Japón. I don't know.
Okay.
that's the crazy thing about Bullet Club too. They really are getting their Virgils and Vincents and they're getting their Scott Nortons involved. And the group is so friggin' huge now, it's hard to keep track.
Yeah. Do you own any Bullet Club merchandise? Just curious.
My lady got me a sweet ass friggin' Bullet Club hoodie from Hot Topic. And then that thing is, it's so cool. And then here's the coolest thing. Me and my lady were going to Target a few months ago, and I ran into a guy walking out of Target wearing the same exact hoodie. So we two-sweeted out in front of the building. This was right before the cease and desist happened.
Oh, my. Hey, you never know. I mean, this is, the Bullet Club is a big deal now, and I guess you really never know where you're going to see their merchandise.
Yeah, you're telling me. I mean, my girlfriend's a huge collector of the Pop Figures by Funko. I heard they're going to be coming out with books on Pop Figures pretty soon, and she will be getting her hands on those. Well, yeah, she's also a very, very big fan of the New Japan product. Her favorite is Takahashi, only because he comes out with that stuffed cat named Daryl. She's a huge Daryl fan.
Yes. Huge, not so much Takahashi, but huge Daryl fan then, right?
Yeah. If she wanted to, she'd put that junior strap on the cat.
Hey, it's a step in the right direction, if you ask me.
Yes, that's marketing, baby.
Cody Rhodes, in his attack on Kenny Omega, that happened after Jay White beat Omega for the IWGP United States title. And it's interesting to watch Jay White's ascension, because I remember him, you know, a couple years ago when I sat and watched every match on the G1 tournament. And here was Jay White. He was a young boy along with Dave Finlay, and they were wrestling opening matches on that show in black trunks and such. And now here he is as Switchblade. You know, he's kind of able to track his career. And now he's U.S. champion with a win over Kenny Omega. You know, do you have any opinion on Jay White? Is this too much too soon for him, or do you think he's earned this?
I mean, I don't know anything about him as a young boy. Seeing him show up as Switchblade is all new to me. And I love this so much. He is doing such a great job. I mean, we're in the month of February right now, and I'm already saying, like, Rookie of the Year. Like, I am so impressed with his product. I know, I'm so impressed with the way he presents himself. I'm like, yeah, he really does look like a killer. All right, good for you, Jay White.
Yeah. I'm just kind of curious on your take on anyone in, you know, we've seen Shinsuke Nakamura come over and have some success in WWE, although he won the Royal Rumble. Is there anyone you see in New Japan right now who you think if they went to WWE at some point, big things could be in store for them there?
Number one on my list has to be Okada. The guy's got... Yeah, he's got a good size to him. One of the matches on the New Japan World app, but he actually did a main event match out in Australia against this dude named Slex. But after he beat him, Okada grabbed the microphone and he cut an English promo, or a promo in English with everybody in the crowd. And he just comes across as just like so genuine. You can really get behind him. I think he could translate really well in the WWE. I mean, other than him, I could just, I don't know, spot off all the main talents on the roster. They can all probably plug in pretty decent. I think Suzuki versus Samoa Joe would break the world in half.
It might. I don't know if there would be any survivors to that match.
Nope.
Wow, okay. I mean, you've got Omega, and he's a guy for the last couple of years who, because he is American, or Canadian, rather, people keep projecting him to WWE. That would be such a huge get, but he just seems so happy in New Japan right now.
Yeah, he does. I keep thinking if he went to WWE, it just wouldn't be as great as people think it would be. It's just there's always that threat that there here comes the next, you know, let's say any NXT guy, they run like an 80% chance of just drifting away on the mid card. And I think Kenny Omega would be no different than that. I just don't see the WWE knowing what to do with a guy like him. And plus, they're going to hate the size of him. He's not that tall compared to the other guys.
Yeah.
So I think that would be such a big deterrent. I mean, if I were him, just ride it out in New Japan as long as you can. I mean, I don't know. Shinsuke he rode it out in Japan for quite a long time before coming back to going to the WWE. And he just won the Royal Rumble. So, you know, I think Kenny Omega's got a lot of time. A decent amount of time to just, you know, a couple more years and then go over to WWE and see what happens.
Well, Kurt, I appreciate you joining us here on Wrestling Night in America and just getting to talk to you again. And I'm sure we will meet up again right here sometime in the future.
Yes, Greg, always a pleasure. And since it's Super Bowl weekend, I just want to say I'm glad to be the Tony Dungy to your Dan Patrick, sir, and until we meet again.
All right, thank you so much. That is Kurt Hoffman, former producer of Gonzo and the Greg, one of my early audio shows for VIP members of PWTorch.com. It is in the archives. We did top five list, new top five list every week, and also had some fun segments that we had on the show as well. So we'll come back and take your phone calls, 515-605-9345. We'll talk about Impact Wrestling. We'll talk about some indie shows, big indie shows that happened this week as well, and answer your Twitter questions. Tweet me at Greg M. Parks if you have any questions for me. So we'll be back right after this on Wrestling Night in America.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLiveCast.com, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. The number to call to chat is 515-605-9345. We'll go to the phones with the first call of the afternoon. It is from the 478 area code, 478. Please state your name, where you're calling from. 478. Thought it might have been Darrell from Georgia, but I guess not. So we will go on with the show and talk a little bit about Impact Wrestling from this past week. It was the first episode of the Don Callis, Scott D'Amore regime. And unlike previous TNA Impacts, GFW, call it whatever you want, resets, this was not necessarily a hard reset. The most notable change was the move back to the four-sided ring, but it was not made a big deal of. It was not a major reset show like WCW used to do, where they would gather all the talent in the ring. This was basically a show that followed the previous week's Genesis episode. And if you want to read into anything, there was a reset, I suppose, that you could consider at the top of the food chain, where Austin Aries made his Impact Wrestling return and defeated Eli Drake, who had been the Impact Wrestling global champion. He came out at the very end of the show. So that's really the only reset that was done, aside from the changing of the ring, which is a good sign on one hand, and it's kind of the steadying hand that you would expect Don Callis to Impact Wrestling. Impact has had so many resets over the years. Any kind of major visual reset or storytelling reset, I think, would be just a signal that this is a company that continues to be in disarray and continues to churn management positions, and I don't think that's the impression you want to give to your viewers. So I thought it was good that they didn't throw too much out there in that first episode. And that also made Aries' title win in the last segment mean more. It wasn't competing with a bunch of other news, bunch of other returns, bunch of other debuts that happened on that show. So from that standpoint, while there may be some people disappointed that it did not feel like a major reset show and there wasn't a ton of major news coming out of it to get viewers hooked for the next few episodes, I think that, again, the steadying hand principle was more important for this particular reset than for some of the resets we've seen in the past. I do want to touch on the Genesis episode because it continues the format of Impact featuring former pay-per-view events as major Impact episodes. And on this Wrestling Night in America livecast, we do talk about the major shows in professional wrestling. So I do want to touch on that. Genesis saw Matt Sydal beat EC3 for the Grand Championship with no judges. So they are getting away from the judging system of the Grand Championship format. You know, it made the Grand Championship format stand out. I think there was a number of storytelling possibilities you could do with that, but I think at this point, Impact had run through most of them. So I guess it doesn't surprise me that judging and the scoring has gone by the wayside. You know, we've seen Impact throughout its history introduce a lot of, I don't want to say gimmicks, but a lot of attempts to differentiate the company from others out there. They had the top 10 ranking, which is ironic now that SmackDown has just announced their very own top 10 ranking. We'll get into that a little later on. But it lasts for a very short period of time. And I applaud Impact for trying something different and trying a different stipulation or a different format for a match. I don't think it caught on. I think it what it hurts the most is the crowd reactions, because crowds are used to wrestling matches sort of taking them on this roller coaster of storytelling. And when you are only invested in 2-minute increments until there is that rest period, I think it asks the crowd to come down in the middle of the match too often and too quickly to really get them back into gear for the other segments, the other active segments of the match. So I think that was one of the problems with it. But again, would I have kept it? Maybe just to differentiate things a little bit and to make that format different to break up the usual matches. But I can't fault them for going away from it either. So Matt Sydal beat EC3 for the Grand Championship. Obviously, EC3, WWE, and NXT bound. He was on the NXT TakeOver Philadelphia show in the crowd, so that is no longer any kind of secret. Laurel Van Ness beat Allie to retain the Knockouts title, also at Genesis, in which there were many titles on the line. Moose defeated Bobby Lashley, and that seemed to be Lashley's break from ATT as Dan Lambert was put through a table. And Eli Drake retained the title over Alberto El Patron and Johnny Impact in a steel cage match where if El Patron and Impact lost the match, they would not be allowed to challenge for the Impact Global title for as long as Eli Drake was champion. So coming out this past week, Donis had set up a tribute of sorts to Eli Drake, the champion, and you know, with the top two challengers out of the way, certainly Drake and Adonis were on cloud nine until, of course, Austin Aries came out. So this past week, again, was the first taping from Orlando under the Don Callis, Scott D'Amore regime. Matt Sydal retained the Grand Championship over Falaba. We saw Bobby Lashley defeating KM, who as of late who had been a part of the America's Top Team group. Kira Hogan, in her Impact Wrestling debut, upset Laurel Van Ness, the Knockouts champion, in a non-title match. That was thanks to a distraction from Allie, and she earned a title opportunity next week on Impact Wrestling, did Kira Hogan. So it will be a rematch this time with the Knockouts title on the line as Kira Hogan challenges Laurel Van Ness this coming week on Impact. In tag team action, Moose and Johnny Impact defeated Alberto El Patron and EC3 when Moose pinned Alberto. And during the final segment of the show, Austin Aries returned, beat Eli Drake for the Global Championship. So Laurel Van Ness is, I don't think it's any secret at this point, she requested her release from the company, so they're in the process of getting the Knockouts title off of her. No spoilers as to who wins it or anything like that. The addition of Austin Aries is something that I think Impact Wrestling really needed. They were getting a lot of a lot of people leaving. Bobby Lashley is a name that when his time is up is expected to go to WWE, although I don't think anything has been signed, sealed, and delivered at this point. But it's an expectation that he will be gone. Of course, you know, as I said, EC3 has left the company. So there are some holes at the top of the card on Impact Wrestling that need to be filled by someone either getting promoted from the undercard or new signings like Austin Aries. I also forgot to mention that on this past week's episode, it seemed for the time being that OVE and LAX are done with their issue. It looks like we're moving on from that. Sami Callihan cut a really good promo in the ring on LAX and vowed that they would return at some point to regain the Impact Wrestling tag titles. And then it was Trevor Lee and Caleb Conley who attacked LAX after that promo exchange. So it appears Trevor Lee and Caleb Conley are next up for the tag team championship. So that's something to keep an eye on. And of course, if you are an Impact Wrestling fan, if you watch Impact Wrestling each week and can't get enough of it, there's not a lot of places out there that give really solid analysis of Impact Wrestling anymore. However, you can tune into Andrew Socek and Mike McMahon each week after Impact Wrestling goes off the air right here on the live cast. They will take calls and discuss that episode of Impact. So if you are an Impact Wrestling fan, it's the same number to call here. Call in and talk to them about Impact. Tune in, listen in to their analysis. They've covered Impact for quite a while for PW Torch, and they're really good at it. So give them a listen on Thursday nights. Coming up on February 9th at 8 p.m., brace for Impact on Twitch. This was something that was plugged throughout this last episode of Impact. And this is Impact Wrestling in conjunction with WrestlePro out in Rahway, New Jersey, holding a show. I couldn't seem to find any matches announced through the Impact Wrestling website for this show, but it will air on Twitch February 9th. That is next Friday night at 8 p.m. And I think we're going to see more from Impact Wrestling using the Twitch app more in the way of, you know, kind of trying to figure out some alternative ways to reach an audience. You know, they've got the Global Wrestling Network that's up and running. I don't know how many subscribers they have to that, but certainly they're trying different avenues, different medias to reach a wider audience. So if you're interested, that will be taking place Friday, February 9th at 8 p.m. from Rahway, New Jersey. Again, that's in conjunction with WrestlePro. So, if you are so inclined, we'll have more after another break here on the PW Torch Livecast Wrestling Night in America coming up. So stay tuned.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Wrestling Night in America continues here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I am PW Torch columnist Greg Parks here with you on Super Bowl Sunday, as we plow through some of the biggest shows in wrestling from the past week, and we move on now to the indies. If you want to call and talk about anything that we've talked about here on this show or want to bring up anything else, the number to call is 515-605-9345. So do call in if you have comments you'd like to make about any of the big shows that Kurt and I talked about in the first half hour of the show or anything else you'd like to discuss that is on your mind in the world of pro wrestling. I had a Twitter question sent in by our good friend Frank, and he asked, based on the landscape of things right now, I'm going to assume it's safe to say we don't divert from Reigns-Lesnar to maybe Strowman-Lesnar for Mania. Braun is 100 times more popular than Roman, and it's crazy he's the odd man out at the moment. I suppose a match with Triple H? Question mark. You know, I think that Frank, you're right that I don't think there's any diversion from Lesnar-Reigns. This is a match that's been built up for almost a year now. I don't think they go in a different direction this late in the game. Braun Strowman has been hot since the summer, and I don't, you know, I don't really see that being a direction they go as much as many people I think would like to see that. I don't know what's in store for Strowman. I think he's and I talked about this, I think, on the Royal Rumble post show that we did. I think he and Randy Orton right now seem to be the biggest names who don't really have anything set for WrestleMania. And I did sort of preview WrestleMania in my column for VIP members. I do a column each week in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. This week it was a VIP online exclusive, pwtorch.com. If you're a member, I looked at the fallout from the Royal Rumble and tried to piece together a WrestleMania card based on where things are set after the Rumble. And yeah, Strowman is a guy who, you know, you could put him in there with Triple H. Is Triple H going to do some sort of tag match, mixed tag with Stephanie against Ronda Rousey? You know, is that a thought that is still out there? Certainly Triple H at this stage, I don't think he's going to miss WrestleMania as long as he can go. So he'll have something to do with the show. And Braun Strowman is a big enough name and has been a big enough part of this year in WWE to where he will have something to do on the show. There are certainly many ways to get to Braun Strowman versus Triple H at this point. So I think that's as good a guess as any at this point. I don't think Kane is in the picture to face Braun Strowman at WrestleMania. I think that what we saw was sort of the write-off of Kane this past week. And, you know, Strowman, that sort of reset Strowman a little bit because now they'll have the Elimination Chamber match to come up with the number one contender, which will likely be won by Roman Reigns. So Strowman will have time on his hands to do something. And it could be something as simple as, you know, Strowman has been tearing apart Monday Night Raw. He's been creating chaos. And remember, Stephanie McMahon was the one that hired him back after Kurt Angle fired him. So it's not a big leap to get to Triple H getting involved or Stephanie fearing for the Raw brand and asking Triple H to come in and sort of put Braun in his place in a form of fashion at WrestleMania. So that could be a direction they go. And that could be how they get there. But certainly Strowman, I think, versus Triple H is a possibility. I do want to talk about Raw this past week when John Cena and Elias qualified for the Elimination Chamber match. This week, Roman Reigns takes on Bray Wyatt in a qualifying match for the Elimination Chamber. Also, it was announced by Stephanie McMahon that we'll have the first ever women's Elimination Chamber match. And Alexa Bliss will be putting her title on the line in that match at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view, which is coming up soon. So we know that Asuka, in winning the Women's Royal Rumble, has an opportunity at WrestleMania to face a champion of her choosing. She has yet to select whether it will be the Raw Women's Champion, whomever that may be after Elimination Chamber, or the SmackDown Women's Champion, which is currently Charlotte. So the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view will take place February 25th on Sunday night. And, of course, here at Wrestling Night in America, we will have all of your Elimination Chamber fallout as we'll go on the air after the Chamber event covering the show from all angles. So around 11 p.m. Eastern time, I guess, would be my guess as to when we'll be going on the air. Other than that, we're on the air 8 p.m. Eastern, of course, for this week with the Super Bowl, but most weeks we're on at 8 p.m. Eastern when there's not a pay-per-view. And I would be remiss if I did not mention my former Wrestling Night in America co-host, Pat McNeil, whose life schedule has sort of changed that took him away from Wrestling Night in America. But if you miss Pat, you can, of course, hear him every week on Wayback Playback with Jim Valley for VIP members of pwtorch.com. And he's also got a new Tuesday livecast called Making the List with Pat McNeil. So, don't forget to tune into that. If you missed Pat's great insight that he provided on Wrestling Night in America, you can catch him Tuesdays on Making a List on pwtorchlivecast.com. Wanted to get that plug in there for Pat. On SmackDown, this coming week, we will have Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn for a shot at AJ Styles and his WWE title at the Fastlane pay-per-view. So we've got, coming up before WrestleMania, we've got Elimination Chamber on February 25th. We also have WWE, am I getting the wrong name? No, it is Fastlane. March 11th, 2018, from Columbus, Ohio, the Nationwide Arena will be Fastlane. So we'll have Elimination Chamber on the 25th. Then we'll have 2 weeks to 1 week to reset. And then it's the 11th is Fastlane before WrestleMania this year. So the winner of Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens on SmackDown WWE title shot as Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon continue to drive a wedge between Team Yet. And also on SmackDown this coming week will be Rusev versus Bobby Roode for the United States Championship. That will be interesting. We'll see. Rusev got a huge ovation this past week at the Royal Rumble, which was not really a surprise. WWE, and I've said this for weeks now, it'll be interesting to see how and if they capitalize on Rusev and the popularity. So do they capitalize on the title? I thought at first maybe they would really seriously consider a tag title run of Rusev and Aiden English, but now we have Rusev taking on Bobby Roode for the United States title. So this could be a changing of the hands here. We did not see Dolph Ziggler on SmackDown this past week after he was the number 30 entrant into the Royal Rumble. Remember, he had given up the United States Championship and walked out of WWE. So this is another opportunity where Dolph Ziggler could come back and create some issues with Bobby Roode, maybe costing him the United States title and allowing Rusev. Past week on SmackDown, Rusev did defeat Kofi Kingston, Zack Ryder, and Jinder Mahal to earn this United States Championship opportunity. The Bludgeon Brothers won another squash. Carmella attempted to cash in on Charlotte, but the referee, for some reason, was feeling very verbose and needing to explain a lot, apparently, to the ring announcer, which gave Charlotte time to recover. Baron Corbin defeated Ty Dillinger. Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable over Breezango and AJ Styles, and Shinsuke Nakamura defeated Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in the main event. There is always the possibility that the dissension that is now happening within Team Yep could be all a ruse from Zayn and Owens to lure Shane and Daniel Bryan into a false sense of security. There has been some speculation that we'll see the finger poke of doom this coming week on SmackDown, where either Owens or Zayn will sacrifice themselves for the other so that they may get a title shot at Fastlane against AJ Styles. We don't know. And we don't know what the end game is yet for this Sami Zayn versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens versus Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan feud. Certainly a match at WrestleMania, but you don't know what kind of match because Daniel Bryan still has not been cleared, as far as we know, for in-ring competition. So does he get a surrogate team with Shane McMahon to take on Team Yap? Does Team Yap truly explode in the coming weeks, leading to Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens, best friends turned enemies turned best friends turned enemies again at WrestleMania? I think for a match of that caliber, you know, we've seen Zayn and Owens before. It's not new. But given the storyline that they're in, which has been at the top of SmackDown for some time, it would make sense for them to face off at WrestleMania if indeed they go their separate ways. Now, then you have to ask yourself, how do Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan play into this? Because they've played too big of a part in this storyline to just disappear from it before WrestleMania. Does Shane McMahon side with Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan side with Sami Zayn? Does it end up being some sort of battle for power where if Daniel Bryan's wrestler wins, Daniel Bryan gets full control of SmackDown and vice versa? There are so many unanswered questions, And I don't even really get the sense that WWE necessarily knows where they want to go with this storyline. And not to say that it's treading water, because there are new elements that are established each week. But I don't see the bigger picture. Like, there are some storylines and feuds that you can see going a certain direction, and you watch wrestling long enough to understand the certain beats of that story and where it's headed. This is not one of those, which I think is a good thing, but it also creates a lot of interest, but I think it creates a lot of nervousness for the fans watching, because they don't want to see a story that they invested a lot of time in, turning into some farce at WrestleMania. And I don't know what would need to happen for it to be considered such, but at some point, this feud is going to need to be put into overdrive. And there's been a lot of bickering back and forth between Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. They do seem to be still on the same page as a whole, but I think fans are eagerly anticipating the next step and when something more concrete gets established between those two. So that is what is on tap for Raw and SmackDown this week. Of course, Raw, as we get closer to the Elimination Chamber, will set up some more matches. The Revival seems to be getting a push, so we'll see if they get into the tag team title talk. What was not announced by WWE.com was qualifying matches for the Women's Elimination Chamber match. It just said that there's likely to be confirmed some women in the match. And just based on the sheer numbers of women, I don't think it would make a ton of sense to do qualifying matches. So it looks like instead we will get some names of women who will be in the Women's Elimination Chamber match, but it may not necessarily be through qualifying matches. I don't know what device they would use to select the women to be in the match, but we'll have to find out. I guess that's why we tune in each and every Monday night. So that is coming up tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw and Tuesday night on SmackDown. So we will take a final break and be back with phone calls, and we'll talk about indie wrestling and some of the big events coming up right after this here on Wrestling Night in America.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America, before we get to the big events of the weekend, we'll go to the phones. And the 478 area code, 478, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Durrell from Georgia. How you doing today, Greg? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, Durrell. There he is. What's on your mind today?
Okay. I want to go back to something that you were speaking on when it comes to the Women Elimination Chamber. Since Asuka hasn't picked opponents yet, do you think she should pick whoever wins the Elimination Chamber on Raw, since they're building her up to be dominant, and it would seem more dominant if she was in the Elimination Chamber? But since she's the Rumble winner, wouldn't it just be obvious for her if they're not having Charlotte versus Rousey, is just put on her versus Charlotte?
Yeah, we do have to look at Asuka not being in the chamber match, because she did win the Rumble, so she'll be conspicuous by her absence there. I don't know if challenging the because the women are having a chamber match, I don't know that that makes it any more reasonable for her to challenge the winner of the Elimination Chamber match. I think it all comes down to what Ronda Rousey's doing. I think it comes down to, is she in some sort of mixed tag match with Stephanie and Triple H and a male wrestler, or does she challenge whoever does not face Asuka for the title? Charlotte versus Rousey would make the most sense if Rousey is going to challenge for a title, which would leave Asuka versus either Alexa Bliss or whoever wins the Raw Women's Elimination Chamber match. I think Rousey versus Charlotte makes much more sense from a star potential point of view. And just from a competitiveness point of view, I think it's it would come off as more realistic for Charlotte to have a chance against Rousey than for Alexa Bliss to, just based on the size factor. But then again, you know, we could have a different Raw champion after Elimination Chamber. So, you know, Asuka and Rousey may not make their intentions clear until after the Chamber. Let's say Nia Jax wins the Chamber match. You know, do you put Rousey in there against Nia Jax and then have Asuka challenge Charlotte for the women's title? So there's still a lot of moving parts to go. Certainly the women having their own Elimination Chamber match, I think Darrell puts a wrench into being able to predict what's going to happen with the women at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think so too. And I would be different than most. I think she should have faced Alexa Bliss and get like a Goldberg moment, come out there and destroy someone since you expected her to get a win in her first defeat and her first match. And since I don't think they got Charlotte playing heel, I think it would be totally different if Charlotte was heel and not babyface at this time. But they can always switch it. But was my idea, have her go against Alexa Bliss and let Alexa Bliss carry the match by building it with her on the mic, since we don't know about Ronda Rousey and how she is on the mic. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think from a personality standpoint, Alexa Bliss would work as an opponent for Ronda Rousey. They are so different, and you know, you would hope that Rousey would be okay on the mic. We just don't know. I mean, it's a totally different environment than cutting promos in MMA and a UFC, when you have the ability to freestyle, when you say whatever comes to your mind, when the match you're in sort of dictates what you're going to say. It's a different environment. And, you know, we don't know that Rousey is necessarily going to be scripted as tightly as others. We would assume so because, you know, that's the environment WWE runs, but we don't know if she's got the star exception to that. But I think from a believability standpoint, I think it would be hard. You know, Alexa Bliss is someone who talks a big game, but knowing Rousey's legitimate credentials, I would have a tough time even buying Bliss talking tough on a promo against Rousey. You know, I would have a tough time believing that she believes that she would have a chance against Rousey.
Yes, but you know, she's the Weasley heel, so it just, you know, you think that she's in there to she's supposed to lose and lose fast. And also, if you're not sure on Rousey in the ring, also that match can be quick and you can save both people and just build up the heat with Alexa, maybe have a jumper from behind or something, set her up. And then when you finally get in, he's two in the ring, you face off, and you don't know if Ronda could go for 10 minutes or even 5, you can just have her beat him real quick and become champion and then gradually work her into more longer matches, since she is green in wrestling and you don't know how she would look in the ring. And you can just do that until you're ready to gear her up, maybe for a Charlotte or maybe even an Oscar, where you can keep both undefeated and have them meet up at next year WrestleMania.
Yeah, look, Darrell, I think that the bottom line here is that there are still a lot of options for WWE to go, and I think they're all good options. I don't think you can really go wrong if you do Rousey versus Charlotte. I think there's a lot of intrigue there. If you do Asuka versus Charlotte, I think there's intrigue there. If you do Bliss versus either one, I think there are advantages to that. And if you do Rousey in a mixed tag match involving Triple H and Stephanie, I think there would be a lot of interest in that too. So they've got a lot of options there, and they're all relatively appealing at this stage of the game.
Yes, sir. I'm just hoping that on Mania, you can get at least 2 or 3 women's matches on the main card instead of just having one big main one or whatever. Just get at least two single matches, or maybe even 3, so you can really show that you're not just touting that you're doing the women empowerment or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're really showing that you're going with the women. That's my whole idea. So that's why I say they got a lot of plans, but hopefully they can go through and pick out the right one and at least give us more than one.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Anything else for us this afternoon, Darrell?
And only last thing is, since ROH doing streaming, how do you feel about it? Do you think, well, I know the price is $9.99 plus $20 if you're trying to get all their pay-per-view. What do you think? Do you think that will hamper them since, you know, $9.99, you get all the pay-per-views and the extra content with WWE, and with most streaming services, you just pay one flat fee and you get everything off of day one.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, WWE sort of set the price in the marketplace when they did the $9.99 deal, and now anytime anyone has anything priced over that, you have to look and say, you know, what kind of deal are you really getting? I think ROH going into streaming makes sense for them. I think it's the, you know, it's a move that so many independent companies are making, that it makes sense for them to do it. You know, I don't know how much overhead there is. You know, I don't know what the break even point for them is. So if there's low overhead, you know, maybe they don't need a lot of subscribers to really break even or to make money. So maybe given that price point, maybe they will still end up making money on it. It's tough to say, but I think getting into the streaming game is the right move for them. And, you know, every company that streams seems to have a little different take on what they're offering and how much and what deals you get through it. So, you know, it's I think it's a step in the right direction for ROH, if nothing else.
Yes, me too. I like it. Just want to see how everything goes. And, you know, since their production on television don't seem as good all the time, I just want to see how it fits once you put it with the streaming services, and do they upgrade their TV tapings and stuff like that. And one last thing, they having a match with Omega versus Cody, and I think a few weeks later, a few weeks before, you got New Japan with their Strong Style Evolve show. For ROH to tout success on that, and that match itself can be considered successful, what do you think should how would they people judge it and make sure that it's successful? Like for ROH as being a pretty big match, and for people who say about Cody and Omega and their drawing power and stuff like that, what can be touted as a success and what can be touted as not as successful as people would think, and could put a damper on it if it doesn't be a certain way?
I think it would be very difficult for that match to not be successful. There's a lot of things going for it. They're doing it WrestleMania weekend, so they've got the built-in crowd there. It'll be a heavy, smart crowd where you'll have a lot of Bullet Club fans, a lot of New Japan fans probably in the area for WrestleMania. So they'll certainly want to take in a match the size of Cody versus Kenny Omega, so I don't doubt that it will be full. You know, from an in-ring standpoint, you know, Kenny Omega is on such a roll at this point, and Cody Rhodes is certainly good enough to where this match is going to be good. You know, it's going to be, and depending on how they build it up until that point, I would expect it to be a grudge match. I would expect it to be more like Omega versus Chris Jericho than Omega versus Okada. Certainly, you know, it's going to be more hard hitting, I think, because this is really a battle over who sees themselves as the biggest star within the Bullet Club. You know, so I think there's just so much going for this match that it would be very difficult on any level for it to be any kind of failure.
Yes, sir. You know, since it's booked right next to and on the same day as TakeOver, would it be considered successful if it's a packed house and it's going on the same time as TakeOver, which I'm pretty sure once people start looking at the weeks of bill for the TakeOver in New Orleans, I think that's going to be a real big show with a major card, with the way they might build that card and the matches they might have on it. Do you think that would affect it some? And should it be put on before TakeOver, or is it a mistake if you're putting it on the same day as TakeOver?
No, I don't think it's a mistake. In fact, you know, there's going to be so many people in that area, and only a select few in the grand scheme of things are going to be able to get in and get tickets to the TakeOver show. There's going to be a lot of other people around the city, wrestling fans, I mean, who are looking for something to do. And if TakeOver is number one on their list, you've got to imagine an ROH show with Omega versus Cody is number two on their list. So I think that would draw the people who weren't able to get TakeOver tickets, not to mention the ROH and New Japan fans who are there not because of WWE, who, you know, find WWE too mainstream, even NXT TakeOver, who are there probably to see Cody versus Omega. So even with TakeOver going on at the same time, I don't think they'll have a lot of trouble drawing.
That's true too. I was stating the fact of, you know, everybody wants to be the talk of that night. Like TakeOver most Saturdays are the talk of the night and sometimes the talk of the weekend. And just putting your show on, maybe you get an awesome match, but what if it's drowned out by the talk of TakeOver and everybody talking about TakeOver this, TakeOver that? Does that hurt you in certain factor where how, you know, certain times UFC shows don't want to be put on next to a major UFC show don't want to be put next to a major boxing show and stuff like that, if
yeah.
you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
because
I
you
do.
Don't want to take
I,
none
I
of your people
think
away
how, right. I do think that there's enough people who are just New Japan fans or just ROH fans who would be interested enough to where they'll make a lot of noise about Cody versus Omega that, you know, it wouldn't necessarily get drowned out in that circle by the TakeOver show. So I think that's a big enough show to where the ROH show I'm talking about, where I think unless something absolutely crazy happens, I think the two talking points coming out of that night would be whatever the main event of TakeOver is and Cody versus Omega. I think it would be tough. I think it would be tough for, I don't want to say anything because we don't know the card yet and we don't know the setup, but I think it would be tough for a lot of NXT to overshadow that particular match.
I got you. That was just my feelings on it. Just wanted to see what your take was on those shows and everything. But I'm intrigued to see, and I think it's a hot WrestleMania season when you got everything coming up with the Strong Style Evolve right before. Then you got the Mania season. It could be a big weekend just depending on how they book everything out. But I'm pretty sure with TakeOver, since they haven't failed anybody so far, they might get it in. That match between Omega and Cody is very intriguing just for those type of fans, since they share the same type of fans also. So that was another reason why I asked.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be another very interesting WrestleMania weekend. A lot going on. A lot of companies trying to put their best foot forward, knowing that there's a lot of fans built in because it's WrestleMania area. So certainly those are a couple of things that TakeOver and then Cody versus Omega are just a couple of, the dozens of big shows that will be going on that weekend. So Darrell, appreciate the call. Thanks for calling, and I hope to talk to you again next week.
Yes, sir.
That is Darrell from Georgia. We're going to take a break and come back and close out the show with some talk of some major indie shows that are happening around this time. So don't you go away. Wrestling Night in America continues.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America, pwtorchlivecast.com. I am PW Torch columnist Greg Parks. We had former Gonzo and the Greg producer Kurt Hoffman on earlier in the show, where he talked about TakeOver and New Japan. Of course, as we mentioned earlier in the show, New Japan, New Beginning in Osaka next Saturday, February 10th. Some of the big matches there include Yoshihashi versus Naito, Will Ospreay versus Takahashi for the Junior Heavyweight Championship, Goto versus Evil for the Never Openweight title, and Okada versus Sonata for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. That is one of the big shows that are coming up. Evolve 100 will emanate from Queens on February 17th, available on WWNLive.com. Stardom had a show earlier today. Viper over Kaylee Ray and Io Shirai beat Nicole Savoy in the Women of Stardom title match, Wonder of Stardom, excuse me, title match. Those are the two big matches on the Stardom show from earlier. February 3rd, last night, Saturday night, AAW presented Chaos Theory, in which ACH won the AAW title over Rey Fénix. Jessica Havoc defeated Rosemary to retain the women's title for that promotion. And Penta L0M over Eddie Kingston were some of the big matches there. Finally, an interesting note from an NXT house show in Nashville on Saturday night. The show was headlined by Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano against Zelina Vega and Andrade Cien Almas in mixed tag action. That is something to watch going forward on NXT television, given how Almas versus Gargano ended at NXT TakeOver Philly. I'm assuming both women will play a part in the feud going forward. And I'd like to see that mixed tag match as the main event of an NXT house show. I think that's really cool. And I think that's a really great story that can be told there. And I think it is a worthy main event. Also, one last thing. At House of Glory last night, Amazing Red wrestled his final match against longtime rival Low Key. So that was House of Glory last night, Amazing Red hanging him up. That will do it for us here on the live cast on Wrestling Night in America. We thank you for joining us and listening at a bit of an odd time, an unusual time for us here on Wrestling Night in America, but we will be back next week, provided there's no Super Bowl next week, and I think it's only this week. so we'll be back at our usual time of 8 Eastern on PWTorchLiveCast.com. We'll be back on the 18th again at 8 o'clock, and then on February 25th, that is three Sundays from now, depending on how you want to count it. Elimination Chamber Sunday night, we will be going on the air right after the Elimination Chamber special event on the WWE Network. So 2 weeks upcoming at 8 Eastern, and then we'll be going on live on the air, taking your phone calls after the Elimination Chamber show. So thank you for joining us this week on the live cast. And here's a plug for VIP details in case you're interested in becoming a member of PW Torch VIP.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The every single day weight killer hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE editor format of the weight killer hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.